Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Thanks for listening to the show. Don't forget to subscribe on Apple, Google, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you're not sure how, go to paulwinkler.com/how to subscribe. All one word, how to subscribe, or click on the link in the show note.
Welcome to the Investor Coaching Show, a podcast to help you get an insider's view of the financial world and escape common investment traps. We look at the financial news of the day and help you make sense of it so you can relax about money. And here's your host, Paul Winkler.
All right. This is the Investor Coaching Show, and I am Paul Winkler. I'm with Jim Wood. Oh, looks like you got something else, man. Jim, you got something else, don't you? Not yet?
Well, I always have lots of good things to discuss and everything, but I think one of the things that real quickly, I like the title of this, was that just having people kind of think, you know, markets have been good, markets go up, markets go down, that type of thing, but just kind of personalizing, like, how would a 20% market decline affect you? And just, you know, thinking that in terms of your portfolio reaction, because I think
that's actually a really good question. Yeah, you know, simply because it reminds me so much of one of our friends who he loves to use this line. I love to repeat it because I just want to steal it from him all the time because it is such a good line. I don't know where the next 20% move in your portfolio is going to be. And he's talking to investors that are doing everything right, diversifying as much as they possibly can. Matter of fact, a friend of mine reminded me this week of looking at, you know, portfolios that we're guiding investors and that we put together. And this guy was a Nobel Prize winning economist. I'm going to brag. It's kind of cool. But this guy won the Nobel Prize for Economics, Myron Scholes, in 1987, looking at portfolios. And my friend goes, yeah, you know, we feel that the portfolios that we're using are as well diversified as any corporate pension that you'll find out there. And this guy stands up and he goes, no, I beg to differ with you. That is more diversified than any pension that I've ever seen, which is, you know, that to me is perfect. That is exactly what we want. Because when I have broad, broad diversification, people think, well, it's watered down. It's really, really diversified. It's watered down, lower returns. And the reality of it is this. All different asset categories that we would want to hold, like international large companies. You look at the long-term expected return. You always hear me say expected return because it'll never be a 10% return. It's going to be up 20. It's going to be up 30. It's going to be down 5 or it's going to be down 15. It'll be up, you know, 35 or whatever. Well, large U.S. stocks, same thing. You know, long-term return is 10, but that's the expected return, but it never comes in at that. Small companies is 12, international is 12 to 14, so on and so forth. So when you diversify, what happens is you take some of the uncertainty out of it in that, you know, you're going to have one thing that may be down a lot and the other thing may be down just a little or maybe actually up. Like, you know, value stocks were up in 2000 when the market went down. So when we're looking at, you know, putting together this investment portfolio, what we're trying to do is offset some of the volatility of the portfolio to help us get a more, I don't like to use the word certain future, but a less uncertain future. But you're still going to have and still can have declines in value, even if you do everything right. And he always likes to say, I don't know where the next 20% move in your portfolio is going to be. I know the next 100% move has always been up. So
I like to refer to that the same similar way, and then that the downturns are temporary, but then the long-term trend continues.
Right.
And it's kind of saying the same thing in a different way. But the whole thing about kind of mentally preparing yourself for downturns just makes them easy. If you're not surprised, if you know it's going to happen, then it just becomes a little bit easier. And this is just a mental exercise to get yourself in that place, knowing that it's going to happen and knowing that it's okay, that it's happened lots of other times. It'll happen again. And as long as you are confident that, okay, I'm diversified, I'm doing the right things, I've looked at my portfolio and it's built to, you know, withstand this type of volatility long term. And then you get questions. And the reason why this is a valuable exercise is you get questions where people will come in and say, hey, the market's just getting crushed. Should I quit saving? Should I quit putting money in my IRA?
Yeah.
You know, those types of things. And like, of course, it's just the exact flip side. If the market's going down, well, that money that you're currently saving is just getting to buy more. The stocks are the only sale that people will run away from screaming.
Right.
If we want to buy ice cream and our favorite ice cream's on sale, we want to buy more of it. But stocks go down and people panic, think, oh my God, I got to quit saving. And it's the exact opposite response of what they should have.
Well, and it was so funny because, you know, we have people that listen to the show. And last year when we had that big COVID thing, that big COVID scare, and get calls, hardly get any calls where people saying, I want to get out. It was all people wanting to put money in. And that's what education does.
Yeah, that's absolutely. And I had those calls. And there were occasional people. I think people stayed really disciplined. There were occasional people that just did the wrong thing and panicked out. And they've suffered for it.
Right, sure. Oh, yeah, And, you know, in those periods of time, that was, you know, back in March, we go and say, okay, it's time to rebalance the portfolio. You know, the markets are way down and bonds held their own. They went up. And that was a perfect time to go and sell some bonds and buy stocks at a particular period of time. And that is that's the essence of management of the portfolio. That's what you're wanting to do. It's very, very hard to do. It's very easy for us to say, but it's hard to do because you're basically selling something that you keep hearing you're selling something you keep hearing good things about, and you're buying something you keep hearing bad things about. And it's very, very challenging to do that. But yeah, thinking about that, and it's kind of like, you know, when you think marriage counseling and you're saying, okay, so when you guys have your first big fight, what are you going to do? We're never going to fight. It's blissful. I actually saw a study on that was really, really interesting this week. And it was talking about marriages, and it was talking about the level of happiness when there were arguments from time to time. And you know what's interesting is that the marriages where you had arguments, as uncomfortable as they were, the marriages were actually much better 3-4 years in the future. It was just an interesting study. You know, so
I would think that's got to be a bell curve to where, you know, there's an optimal amount, but like too much, then the benefit tapers off back down.
It's interesting when you talk about that. It was how did the arguments come down? Were they abusive? If they were abusive, then it wasn't good. There is some truth to that. Stock market's the same thing. You know, if you have an investment portfolio and it goes down, and you know you have bonds in the portfolio, it allows you to rebalance the portfolio. In long run, the portfolio ends up being all the better for it. If you had nothing but great stuff in a stock market or an area of the market, if it is a very low volatility segment, let's say we're talking about maybe fixed income investments, you know, you don't have much volatility at all. Well, what don't you have when you've got no volatility? You got no return. So there's no happiness there. So it's like the no volatility marriage, zero volatility marriage. You know, the long-term happiness is questionable. This seems weird, doesn't it? The parallels between marriage and a stock portfolio, they just keep getting stronger. It's a strong correlation between the two. But that's really, you know, interesting when you think about that. How do you respond to those downturns?
Well, I just think what people have to keep in mind is that the reason you're in stocks long term is to maintain and grow your wealth over time, keeping up with inflation, that type of thing. And you earn the long term premium from stocks by dealing with that volatility.
Yep.
And that's, you just kind of have to just understand that that's part of the process. And if it doesn't surprise you again, then it becomes a lot less scary. If you know it's going to happen, it's not going to be quite as scary, because it's fear that just almost inevitably that gets people to make the bad decisions and get out at the wrong time. And
Right, exactly. Emotions are your enemy when it comes to investing. Emotions and instincts being go away from pain, go toward pleasure. You know, pain, you go through a market downturn, that's painful. And then you go toward pleasure, whatever just did well, which would be fixed income bonds during a market downturn. And you don't know. We're not sitting here saying this because we think there's a market downturn coming. We don't know. You know, nobody knows. But if you're mentally prepared for it, you end up dealing with it a whole lot better when, not if, it happens. All right. Let's change gears now. Okay, so one of the big trends in the investment industry that I have talked against and have been pretty vocal about, because we go to financial advisor conferences, and I've heard financial advisor goes, oh, they got these robo-portfolios. You know, what are robotic portfolios? What do you think? And I'm like, what's the difference between that and a target date fund? I mean, there's just no difference. And they're, oh, I hadn't thought about it that way. You know, we've had robotic portfolios forever, and people think, oh, it's cheap. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be this great thing, and it's going to, you know, be something to be concerned about. And I'm like, no, you know, they're just as poorly managed as anything out there. Well, lo and behold, a financial planning publication out there says the SEC, the Securities and Exchange Commission, finds widespread deficiencies among robo-advisors. The exam division says that it recently has seen a big rise in the number of advisors providing automated digital advice. And this is literally what I said. You know, there's advisors falling over themselves because they think this is cheap. And I'm telling you, cheap doesn't mean, and I'm, you know, I don't talk about cheap as being a bad thing. Keeping expenses down is a good thing. But when you're myopically focused on nothing but keeping expenses down, you're looking for trouble. More than one half of the robo-advisors had advertisement-related deficiencies, basically, you know, promising things that they couldn't deliver, you know, promising returns and guarantees and all kinds of things that anybody tells you, you have no risk or we're going to guarantee your downside. Guess what? You're not going to get any upside. I mean, it's just there is a natural phenomenon, which is no risk, no return. Robo-advisors also made misleading and prohibited statements on their websites, so they're getting into a heap big trouble out there.
Yeah, there was one that was really flagrant. You'd go to their homepage, and then they would give you a list of, you know, well, because we do it this way, it's going to save you X percent, like 1.5%. Mm-hmm. If we were going to manage your taxes, and it's going to save you another 1.5%. And it just seemed to me, just reading the numbers on the face of it, that they were pulling them out of thin air because they were promising, you know, a several percent increase just by doing these special things, which to me just didn't seem possible just to back up their claims.
Well, and that's what they got into in here, just talking about how they were saying they're fiduciaries, but they're doing a lot of things in their deficiencies were that they weren't doing things that were necessarily in the best interest of the investors. And yeah, a lot of people are using these things through their employer-sponsored retirement plans, and the employer's got a fiduciary responsibility, and that can be really troubling for the employer. And then they're doing this thing where they're using press logos. You see this all the time. Investment firms using, as seen in, you know, Forbes magazine or ABC or NBC, they said CNN and Forbes was one of them that they listed in here. And without using links or disclosure that would explain the relevance or, you know, what was it actually saying that they were good, or was it just that they had advertised in these places or whatever? And, you know, they had these possible conflicts of interest with these firms and advisor compensation and both. It was just a lot of bad stuff in here. And this is just what I've said all along.
And I think it's a point that's been made multiple times, maybe not for a while, but some of these firms too, it's, you know, how they make their money. And in terms, some of the robo portfolios, for example, were having way too much money in cash, creating a cash drag on the portfolio, but that cash was how they made their money. That money, they'd get a split and they'd only pay a little bit of interest, but they'd take that same money, invest it elsewhere, arbitrage the difference, and that's how they made the majority of their money on managing the whole thing.
And they didn't have to declare it as a management fee is basically what Jim's saying. So you have firms that do a lot of things where you're maybe making money off of securities lending revenue, or they're directing all of your trades. This is a big one right here, directing all of your trades to the highest cost investment firm. And because that is just a cost, it's a markup cost, and it's not a visible expense that you can put your finger on, they don't have to declare it as a management fee. And that's the problem. People don't realize this stuff is happening. And, well, you know, I'm kind of glad to see some of these people getting smacked down a little bit for this kind of stuff, because it's something I've talked about for quite a while. And one of the reasons that I've stayed away from these portfolios, quite frankly, for our investors, you know, clients that come in, they'll ask about it and go, no, thanks. Hey, this is Paul Winkler. Hope you enjoyed today's edition of the Investor Coaching Show. You want to learn more about what we do, go to our website, paulwinkler.com. You can watch some of the videos there, and if you're not already a client, you can set up a free initial consultation. Until next time, I'm Paul Winkler, reminding you that I believe that more educated investors are more confident investors, and confident investors are more successful investors. Have a great one. Advisory services offered through Paul Winkler, Inc., PWI, an investment advisor registered in the state of Tennessee. PWI does not provide tax or legal advice. Please consult your tax or legal advisor regarding your particular situation. This information is provided for informational purposes only and should not be construed to be a solicitation for the purchase or sale of any securities.